And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no, no fear. Aaron DeClaire, your independence from here to Stancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedom's with the S, Phoenix.com. Edward Stringham, American economist. Edward Stringham is a Davis Professor of Economic Organization Innovation at Trinity College and President of the American Institute for Economic Research. He's the editor of two books and author of more than 70 journal articles, book chapters, policy studies. His work has been discussed on more than 100 broadcast stations. Let me list them all for you, including CBS, NBC, CNN, Headline News, NPR, NPR. Okay, that's enough. Now, what happens is we had Edward Stringham spoke at one of our early Freedom Summits back in, 04, 05, around in there. And now it's a decade plus later. And he's come back to Freedom Summit February 2nd and 3rd. Go to freedomsummit.com, and you will find all the great speakers that we have there. In the next hour, we're going to have retired federal judge John Buttrick is going to come on and talk about libertarianism. Is it dead? Or we got something new to happen in the Libertarian Party or not? Well, that'd be interesting. So this hour, we got Edward Stringham. Now, from his humble beginnings, we had other economists and so on, they said, hey, you got to get this Edward guy. He's up and comer, man. He's rock and roll and whatnot. Well, he's had a decade to rock and roll. Let's find out how much he's doing. Edward, how's it going, man?
All right, Ernest. Good to be in touch with you again. Such a pleasure.
Well, tell me, since you you graduated and you came and you spoke and, I got a bright future in doing, tell me how it's been going last decade. What have you been doing?
Oh, great. So I got my PhD from George Mason University in 2002. And, there's always going to be certain political discrimination against people who are not following the standard progressive agenda in academia.
Well, but you expected anything different? I mean,
I've actually had a lot of great success, and I'm really pleased with how things have gone. So I've published a book with Oxford University Press. I've been in the Wall Street Journal a couple times in the last year. I've been in the past couple months on CNBC, Fox Business, and Bloomberg. And I even was invited, they didn't air it, but they were going to put a segment. I was invited to be on CNN this weekend. So things are going well. And I guess the main lesson that I've gotten is that hard work pays off, and the ideas related to liberty are so important and so useful, and they make sense. And if one can,
been a criteria. So why the hell does CNN want to talk to you now? What?
Did you come out of the closet or something?
I mean, what?
No, I've been talking on the stations about different topics, pros and cons of tax reform. I think, for example, tax cuts are good, but at the end of the day, what they did was basically pretty measly, and so my taxes are not going down. A lot of people's taxes are not going down. So there's, it's just a mixed bag, and I think groups like CNN are interested in hearing somebody who's going to talk about that, not from a partisan way, but actually from an economic way. So I don't know exactly why they reached out to me, but my own view is basically independent of either political party, as you are too. And my own influence in economics has been people like Hayek, Mises, Rothbard, and other people, a lot of great American economists as well, but just showing the importance of markets. Government is not the source of order in the economy. Government is not the source of economic ingenuity in the economy. Government is not the source of dynamism in the economy. It's the private sector. It's markets. It's not government.
Well, that's one of the things I kind of get the theme of, you know, a lot of the bio in your articles and so on, is that you want regulation, leave the market alone, you know, and it'll regulate itself. But this has not been the drumbeat that you get from certainly any of the lamestream media, the media so last century. So I'm wondering, when they have you come on, what's the hook? You're Purdy? I mean, why?
I also, Ernest, since we last saw each other, I was also listed as one of the 20 hottest libertarian men.
Of course you were. Of course you're so cute. Okay, is that it? Is that your claim to fame?
At this point, so I've been talking about the problem of regulation for a while, and how markets actually people can do things on their own. They don't need the bureaucrat looking over them. You don't need the red tape holding businesses down. Red tape is actually tremendously harmful for business. It's not good for economic activity. And especially the last decade, regulations have just gone out of control. Things like Dodd-Frank strangling the American economy. Most people say, oh, it's just going to hurt, you know, it's just going to control Wall Street. Actually starves all businesses of capital. It starves private individuals from getting loans. I got a mortgage a few years ago. It was basically impossible because of these regulations. And the fact that we're actually, the government now in the last few months is actually easing off some of these regulations. It's like a strangler, like loosening the grip on the neck of the economy.
You know, one thing that I noticed, tell me if this has come across your radar. Early on, when Trump took out from under the EPA some kind of jurisdiction on a lot of the water, you know, I saw that as one, man, you want to curtail any kind of economic development anywhere for anything. You just control the water and you got to get a permission slip to build anything and you're not allowed. You know, when he did that, I'm going, oh, that was the progress. That was their big weapon, man. They were going to just claim water on everything and you can't do nothing. And I'm going, okay, when he went after that, I went, yep, it looks like he might be serious. Has that crossed your radar screen? What's the deal with water and the EPA?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many areas of regulatory overreach where an entity is created in the 70s, and then they start all of a sudden expanding the reach and the scope of it. And in many cases, they just declare, oh, you know what, we have additional power, and we are going to start issuing edicts, and people really have no recourse. It's not legislative, it's administrative law, which is basically the equivalent of dictatorial powers on the part of unelected bureaucrats. And so to basically take away some of that ability is huge. Those people should not be able to be controlling other people's lives if they don't have that just authority.
This is very interesting that you were coming into this, because when you first graduated and you come and spoke at, and everybody was having high hopes, you know, for Edward Stringham, you came into what? How optimistic were you going to have this kind of impact? And are you dismayed it took this long, and why? And then it was all of a sudden, here come the Ron Paul revolution that had to have had, you know, a positive impact, or at least brought attention to something. And the culture shifted a little bit, and your generation is coming into its own. Is it starting to, you know, shift? Just, you know, 'cause my thing was, as a young guy, when I was coming up, you know, I go, yeah, I'm just waiting for all y'all to die off. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, here come, they're like, what? So then I show up and I got gray in my beard. I'm like, we're here. Well, Edward Stringham, he's here. So we'll see if the trend is going that way and what role he has in it. He'll tell us all about it when we come back in just a little bit. Edward Stringham. from the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. Pirate, man, you got to go pirate. Are you a pirate?
I'm a pretty straight-laced guy, Ernest.
Nah, pirate. All right, go like this. Go to piratswithoutborders.com. We have the first, second, third letter Captain Mark, first letter reprisal, fourth letter Captain Mark's coming out. It's all pirate, you know, Arizona pirate. The the promotion of all things decentralized is what the deal is. It's because the Crown always goes, oh yeah, you can go rape and pillage and whatever all the other ships as long as we get a cut. That's a letter of Mark, man. You're all good, but. You know, if you go, I'm good. I'm against all flags. Pirate, you're a pirate. You're not allowed to do that. So this is, we're having fun with this one. Build the ship. So take a look at those letters and you'll get, well, the one we're working on now is on intellectual property and with Stephen Kinsella. And then some of the others, we work with Paul Rosenberg on them. And, you know, a lot of people get their input on them. They're short, sweet, and boom. So you'll dig it.
All right.
The when we come back, I want to get into the progression from the time that you left, where you went, where you started making headway, who was your mentors, who kind of promoted and kept you, and you had a job. I mean, you know, so this is because I could tell from the beginning, for whatever reason, you were being promoted as a libertarian thinker, economist, young student coming up, and I want to know why. You know, I mean, what made you so special? You know, because you're party, you know? So when we come back, you know, who were your sponsors kind of pushing you? Where did you decide to go? And then how have you been treated over the decade? And then now all of a sudden it's kind of, ooh, CNN wants to, you know, get me a date. You know, I'm like, all right, you know, whatever. Oh, yeah, did you get married or anything?
No. Don't, no. I'm not married.
Okay, are you advertising being single? Oh, no, you didn't jump at that one. Oh, okay. Yeah, you don't get in trouble. All right. All right, we'll be right back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Austrian economics, you know, pick me. Well, in the early days, we were encouraged to have Edward Stringham to help, you know, kind of launch his speaking career. If I get to have, say, something about something, and they go, yep, Edward. And I'm going, all right, so what? Why, Edward, young man, you're coming out of college and they're starting to push you and you go into your first job and your next one, and you get published and doing, all of a sudden now you're saying, woohoo, pick me. I'll talk on your TV thing. Why? You know, why were they selecting you early on? What'd you do?
Oh, thanks, Ernest. I've had a lot of great people to be working with, mentorship, supporting me throughout the years. There's this idea that someone who supports or appreciates free markets, they're not going to be able to succeed, get a job in academia. And actually, I've had great success, much to my surprise. So I went to George Mason University, graduated in 2002. My dissertation advisor is Peter Betke. He's always been incredibly supportive. And I ended up having, at the American Economics Association meetings, 23 interviews, which was actually at the time, and I still believe today, the most interviews in the history of George Mason University.
Why?
And it's really just, I would say I'm passionate and I care and I like to actually give economic examples that are real. They're not hypothetical. They're not abstract. But to just show people this is how markets work. So in my book, Private Governance, I go through the history of stock markets and I say, look, this is actually how they work. This was unregulated and it was not controlled by government. And I think that approach has really helped me. It's enabled me to publish in various journals, various even mainstream highly ranked journals, including California Management Review.
I mean, so is this because you take a hard core freaking get out of the way, be an example, you shine because you're alone? Or is it, did you compromise it a little bit and kind of make it, you know, healing our world kind of, you know, touchy-feely? You know, I mean, what made it different?
I believe in pure freedom. I believe the individual should be free to control their lives, and I think that leads to good economic outcomes, and I never have said otherwise. And I think that people appreciate that message, the fact that I'm not just coming out there like, oh, let's support a flat tax of 18%. I support a flat tax. I support a flat tax of 0%.
Yeah. I mean, so you weren't a big, giant fan of Gary Johnson, Bill Well, were you?
Oh, I mean, it just shows the whole approach of well, you know, nobody cares, nobody's interested, and the people who have this watered-down, weak set of ideas, it's not compelling. People realize that either he doesn't care or he cares, but he's kind of, you know, not showing what he believes. And
so
in this case, I'm not sure what he actually does.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, are you showing any deference to the Libertarian Party? They're going to have a role in the 18-20 election cycle. You care?
No, I don't. I don't believe in politics. I believe that humanity is made great by individuals, by business people, by artists, whoever. And I don't think the road to salvation comes through politics. I think that
Trump, the salvation, America, make America great again, Trump. You know, well, see, my thing is, we've been doing the Trump Report for 2.5 years, and we just finally got, okay, we're good. We get it. We had the first year, and we're good. And what happened was I needed to have the definition of America, what the hell that meant. And is that culture, people, geography, America, Inc.? I mean, I have no idea what he's talking about. And great. What the hell is great? How big my mushroom cloud is? I need to know what America and great is. What do you think he means?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great phrase because it means it's an open-ended phrase. And
yeah, he ripped it off the Reagan.
Imagine whatever they think they want to hear. So was great. Again, that also implies a time period, as in 10 years ago, 50 years ago, 200 years ago. It's a very kind of empty platitude, which in the abstract, every single person in America would agree with, but it really doesn't say anything.
Well, what would you think would make America great again? I mean, you've written about it. I mean, yeah, distill it down for me. Skip to the end.
So America was at the forefront of a free society. We never got 100% of the way there, but much more free society than any other country in the world. And we relied on private enterprise, on individual responsibility, on private property rights. And that freedom, letting people experiment and try different things rather than having to ask the crown, to ask the government to do things, led to a huge explosion in a good way of economic activity and economic growth, economic innovation, the Industrial Revolution being transferred here from England in a much bigger way, such that this relatively new country surpassed the amount of wealth in England or Holland.
Yeah, which was our freaking bane, because I tell you, this is what happened. You have freedom, and you have kind of like this almost sort of government that, you know, pinky swore that what you're going to get, and it becomes so prosperous that it's a big giant carcass to feed off of. And I'm just, we became, because of the freedom aspect, is what made us so big to become a target. And I'm
going, exactly.
Damn, man, how do we get out of this thing now?
Right. So larger animals, unfortunately, attract larger parasites. And so with success comes all of these people who want to say, okay, great, you've done this. Now how can I live at the expense of existing people? We've got a tremendous amount of wealth that has been generated by different entrepreneurs, by different titans of industry. And then that then subsequently attracts people who say, oh, cool, great, now I can leech off of them. I can live off of their exploits. And you see that today. It's almost, as if we're living in an Ayn Rand novel for the past 10 years.
Oh, exactly. You read Atlas. I had to read Atlas Shrugged in like the early 90s. Everybody's going to make you read it, and libertarian, you got to read it. And I did that, and I go, holy crap. I could see that in the 50s when she wrote this, you know, like the last third of the book had yet to come out, and we were down to the last 40 pages or something by the time I read it. I'm going, holy crap. Now we're like in the, hell, we might even be at the end game, you know? So this is, you know, and that's one thing that I'm wondering what you're advocating here. Is it taken seriously? I mean, when you're going to these different journalistic platforms and you're talking, are they, just try and make fun of you? They're like, damn it. You know, something wicked this way comes, and Edward's describing it, and maybe the solution is freedom! Freedom's the answer. What's the question? Well, we're going to find out. Get all detailed when we come back. Edward Stringham out there advocating for freedom and the economy. We'll be right back. Now, let's make some notes here real quick. Is there anything you want to make sure we discuss, come back with, and get part of?
I think we're great. One thing that I'd love to talk about is the American Institute for Economic Research, which was founded 85 years ago by E.C. Harwood, who was a great champion of freedom.
And okay, now what's it called? Let me write it down here.
American Institute for Economic Research, founded out of MIT in 1933, has been a strong, now it's based in Western Massachusetts, defender of property rights and sound money.
Okay, now we're still recording in, you know, in the breaks and everything, FYI,
sure,
before I ask this
yep.
question, okay? I have, you know, my years, I was Edward Stringham in, you know, the early 90s, okay? The young guy out there doing give 'em what for, and I'm just and I've been seeing all. It's like a method, another parasite, take advantage of her. Is this Coctopus thing? I mean, I'm going. There's just, it seems like they come in and they offer a little bit and they direct or they bleed off and they do. You know, I'm just, you know, and it's going to come again. I see it happening again. It comes in waves where they try and get the young minds of divert into something. Is this, do you have an opinion on?
I reject that whole narrative. I think that they've support lots of people, and they basically say to somebody, what you're doing is interesting, and how can we help? And this is tremendously useful. I've never seen any of the pressure or anything, so I'm completely happy to be a student at George Mason University, where everybody there was entirely supportive of students doing different things, and I think that's a great program.
Well, tell me how George Mason is influenced by the Coke industries.
It's not influence; it's one of their main benefactors,
yeah,
and they have a lot of connections with different
when they support and they go in. I'm wondering to what end, because I'm not getting a principled, it seems like you're coming up against, yeah, but no, policy needs to be, and we're going to kind of divert, and you're not allowed, and I'm just, you know, so I just, every time I get a resistance, it's just like, you know, censorship, it breaking communication. I just route around it. I'm constantly routing around this stuff. So when you say you're apolitical, and I'm going, well, hell, that's all they are, you know. And I'm trying to get a beat on what role they're playing in this next wave that's coming.
So throughout history, especially in the United States, colleges and universities have been recipients of donor money. Often that comes from wealthy people. Those are the people who have money. And we see entire universities being founded. And then people can then, that enables, it gives people a platform, gives people an option to be researching, teaching. And it's very similar here. We've got a very generous set of donors who are saying, you know what, there's not enough people studying economics, and how can we help expand the number of people studying economics?
All right,
and
here we're coming
so
back. Let's
in
talk
my
about
particular
it.
Case, I got, you know, fellowship.
Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Shining and somebody's fanning that flame. You know, that's one thing I want to know. I mean, there's no central plan for freedom. I mean, I'm just like, yeah, you know what? So I want to give, you know, props to some of the supporters and people that have created and made people like Edward. You know, there are different institutes and groups, and you got the Koch brother this and the Institute of that and the Cato what you call it and Reason of Somebody and even the LP of the blah, 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 blah. And I'm kind of, you know, got my own, you know, style, but I tell you what, you know, it's a division of labor, there's no central plan kind of thing. Well, Edward's got enough wind in his sails that he's a-cruising. Is it time that you're going, hey, keep helping, or is it time for you to start helping others? Are you still out there needing for yourself, or you big boy now that you're starting to help some other people? And if you are, give me an example.
Well, I think we all need to be helping each other. We need a lot more resources in the space of economics, people who appreciate the factors that made America great to begin with, the importance of freedom, pure freedom. And so we do need a lot more support. And if it's just one person saying that, and that's what problematic part of the 20th century, there was very few people out there talking about the importance of these ideas. So we do need a lot more resources. At the same time, I, whenever possible, will work with students to mentor them. I've got about a half dozen of my former students as college professors at this point in time, and they're very popular among their students. So there's this pipeline. I'm the editor of the Journal of Private Enterprise, and that's also a way where you can give an outlet to people, to help people. And definitely we like to mentor people, especially young people who might need a little bit more encouragement or suggestions.
You know, so, this is the one thing. In the 50s, you had like Ayn Rand, 40s, 30s, whatever, back in the day. She wanted to influence Hollywood, you know, to have screenplays, The Fountainhead, writing books, blah, blah, blah. Then she went to universities, and it's kind of this objectivist thing, and she went after the psych department. You know, it's like psychologists and psychiatrists and whatever, that altruism was a mental disease. You're disordered, man. You freaking, man, you got selfishness is a, you know, the state of humanity, get over it. And so now it's gone to where it's economics. And was that a natural thing? Was that a new vector? Is it where you think the rubber meets the road? Why economics?
I mean, I think a lot of these ideas are complementary. And so if you look at, say, a an Adam Smith or a Thomas Paine. I think a lot of their ideas are complementary. There's the philosophical discussions, but then there's also you're right, but maybe the more rubber meets the road discussions. But economics is not intuitive to many people. Economics, when someone says, "Oh, let's get free health care," I mean, that sounds amazing, but economics points out, no, actually, if it's free, somebody's paying for it, and that's not intuitive to a lot of people. And so there's just a lot of lessons that economics tells us that if one doesn't understand the basics of it, one can come to all types of crazy, crazy ideas. And I would argue that pretty much everything, any governmental argument that I hear, almost always has some economic fallacy underneath it. And so I think economics helps educate people. It's an antiseptic to bad ideas.
Yeah, but politics, they're not looking for the benefit of the people. I mean, they'll say that. I mean, they have to promise it, but they're really looking for, you know, push and pull and my special interest. If I get to do what I want the way I want, because I want, and, you know, when does Edward overlap on what I want, which is I want, I don't know what, lower taxes or something. Is that the best you can do? Because a lot of it is special interest. They want some kind of an advantage.
Exactly. But even that statement, which I am 100% in agreement with, is an economic way of thinking, to point out to people that people, including politicians, think about their own well-being. That is a tremendously useful set of statements. And then once we realize that as a starting point, that politicians might not be out for the benefit of everybody else, once we realize that, then it's like, okay, wait, maybe we shouldn't be giving them so much authority. Maybe we shouldn't be letting them control our lives in all of these areas. And I think that right there is a tremendous, tremendous step. At the end of the day, I believe that policy, for good or bad, is determined by public opinion. And when a lot of people say, oh, communism, that's great. Yeah, oh, we can all be equal. We can all be rich. That's a very dangerous position when, in reality, communism doesn't lead to those things. In contrast, if people realize this is a fallacy, they can actually, you know, withdraw their support from the state, and that's where we start seeing free markets pop up.
But see, that's my thing. That's why we're doing the pirate thing. It's just opinion. It's just my opinion is that, you know, fill in the blank. You get that, the rest of the stuff follows. Just public opinion. It's general opinion. It's where I spend my money, my time, my resources, how I educate my kids, you know, what items I buy, where I buy it. It's just opinion, you know? And if your opinion is, I think everybody should be, you know, given their fair share and kind of a little bit more extra fair for me, you know? It's when you come to the realization, have the opinion that, you know, less government and even none government is a hell of a lot better. And when you do that, all of a sudden that opinion starts to manifest itself in a lot of ways. Are you seeing that happen? Are you you know, pleasantly surprised? Are you cautiously optimistic? Are you go, hell yeah, here we go? I mean, what are you seeing?
So public ideas, I think, do shape the world. And we saw, I would say, the past 10 years, a lot of people assuming, oh, we just need government to control X, Y, and Z, and once we do that, everything's going to be great. And that led to a lot of economic malaise. I believe that the economic downturn of the past 10 years was not due to bad financial decisions on the part of banks, but instead I believe that it was due directly to bad government policy. And you add to that regulations which strangle the economy, we're going to have a sluggish economy. And so if you were to chat with me 10 years ago, I would have been pretty pessimistic about where things were going. But after a couple of years, people realize, wait, this might not be a good idea. We might need to be you know, little bit less supportive of these things. And so the Tea Party, which ended up, you know, going off in all types of different directions, I think originally part of the sentiment with that was, you know, maybe we got to, like, you know, take the hand off the accelerator, foot off the accelerator of government growth, and just showing that the debt increases were unsustainable. I think the last year we've basically eased off of that, and the result has been tremendous boom in the economy. So simply relaxing the harmful government regulations has been great.
You know, when we come back after this break, we'll talk about, because right when he's going into the university and starting to teach and doing and exposed all these young guys, he comes out and the revolution started, you know, around Dr. Paul's campaign. And you go, damn, that had to have some kind of impact. I don't know what, but from his perspective, we're going to find out what. And then is it continuing? You know, is there something that was learned there? Is it ingrained? Is our culture shift? You know, what are we looking forward to in the future? What about Trump? Was that just a, you know, counter the status quo of Nunya? You know, so we're going to find out. Edward Stringham, just a little bit. From the first letter of Captain Mark. History is full of flowery documents claiming to limit the power of the crown, but these poetic social contracts have been impotent to prevent the predation. Limited government is a lie they use to keep us submissive. The crown cannot be trusted to abide by its founding charters, nor its treaties, nor even its own rules. The essence of the crown is centralized violence, and I've had enough. That's why I raised my black banner. I am no revolutionary. My aim is not to reset the cycle of violence, but to break it. My aim is an evolved society, invisible to the crown. Not a new hierarchy, but decentralized networks with no central figure for the crown to target. If you want your servile life, keep it. But we will not submit to the crown's agenda. And when you are ready to stop being its beast of burden, ready for adventure and opportunity, join us at piratewithoutborders.com. Yeah, see, that's my whole thing, is just opinion. You know, it's, and I'd like to hear how, you know, the revolution thing impacted. You know the role that we played in that, right?
Tell me.
The Ron Paul revolution logo, the reverse love.
Oh.
I'm the one that created that.
You should go into graphic design.
It was, well, I ripped it off of somewhere, of Beatles back in the day, saw it on the internet or something, you know, but... What happened was in 06, a campaign that we had for Secretary of State, and, you know, the main sign was still voting with a question mark, and the V in the voting was the V for Vendetta. And it got voted the most popular sign, you know, in the paper. Well, what happened, you know, that Lovolution logo was so popular, everybody wanted to have it, you know, tattooed on their forehead. And when Ron Paul announced that he was kind of sort of thinking about creating a blue ribbon panel to maybe run in January of 07, I go, I already know where this goes. So I go, I talked to Kent Snyder. I go, you guys really go, oh yeah, if we can raise $3 to $5 million, we're going to go, talk to the hand. You'll never hear from me again. I get to do whatever I want and bite me. All right. So we went out and helped. And I traveled all over the country wherever he was going for a debate or something. We would precede him by about 3 or 4 days and make a crap load of those signs and go put them up on all of the overpasses and so on. So when it hit, you know, South Carolina, I think early on one of the debates, it exploded. And we had a workshop downtown Phoenix that I opened up in February of 07. And I go, watch what happens. And everybody's like, how did you know? And I go, how did you not know? I go, what the hell were you guys looking at? I go, this is such an enormous pressure wave that was coming. So by the time it hit May of 07, Ron's in a parking lot in Des Moines, Iowa, when we were doing a thing, and he goes, thanks for letting me join your revolution, man. That's what I'm going, yeah, damn Skippy. It was a people thing. And the reason it worked was a spontaneous order. There was no one in charge. And anytime they tried to collectivize it or want me to copyright the logo or any of that kind of crap, I'm going, you guys don't get it. You want to kill a movement, try to control it. Leave it alone. So that was the only real major role I think I played, was to keep it from being consolidated like the Tea Party happened. Because we saw what was happening. It went straight into RNC. And we're going, nope, 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 nope. So they want to know, can you do the Lovolution again? I go, well, you know, yes and no. I mean, it's going to have a timing. It's just going to happen. but you can't contain this kind of... See, this is my criticism of the Coke thing and so on. They always want to take that kind of stuff, put it in a suitcase, grab the handle, and go peddle the votes or something. And that's why I'm going, no, that's how you kill this stuff. Mm-hmm. Leave it alone. Anyway, that's my personal experience. All right, here we go.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, I can just feel it coming. There is so much stuff that is yet to happen, and it's all been about opinion. Everything that I do, just public opinion. I believe that. Well, who's going to help me believe? Give me the data for me to believe. With Edward Stringer. Yep. This is, this is what I do. You know, Edward, since you were gone and out and playing, I haven't been sitting on my hands, man. I've been in the middle of this crap giving it. But my focus has been to promote people just like you doing what you're doing. But don't ever think that it has never been anything other than you support the concept of freedom's a freaking answer. What's the damn question? And if you can do that and get that opinion as a default from generation next, there's always a generation next, you know, then it's like, oh, here it comes. So when you started, you go back into school and you start and become a teacher, you getting your feet wet there and so on, and then here comes Revolution. You got to tell me how that impacted on campus, to surprise you or not.
So everybody supports freedom to varying degrees, with a couple exceptions of, say, like the Stalins of the world or maybe the police. Most people say, yeah, freedom is good. We need to have some freedom. And same thing with markets. Most people support some degree of markets. Most progressive people are not hardcore communists, so there's some exceptions there too. But the question is how much? And I think what we need to be doing a better job as economists is highlighting that it is freedom. Freedom to trade, freedom to innovate is what makes society good. Now, it can go up and down in waves. And so I would say if I, you know, were to survey people from a couple hundred years ago or 100 years ago, there was more support for freedom overall. During the early 20th century, FDR and the New Deal really started expanding this idea that we need to have more government control of the economy, and that really took us away from our roots of moving in the direction of freedom. And we can see the same thing happening over the past couple decades, or specifically the past decade. It was really, to me, I was quite pessimistic over the past decade, where people just put this blind eye to say, oh, if somebody sounds nice, they talk about hope and change, therefore we should nationalize Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Let's nationalize hope and change.
Yeah, someone sounds nice, like, oh, great, let's have that person in control of the student loan industry. Let's have that person be able to restrict Wall Street. Let's have this person be able to have tremendous amounts of power to start wars, even though at the same time getting the Nobel, quote, Peace Prize. So there was a lot of, people just not realizing how much power they were seceding to expansion of war, expansion of the police state, expansion of spying, all the things that alleged liberals would not be in favor for. They were like, oh, great, yeah, hope and change, war, bomb Afghanistan, bomb Pakistan. So that was, I would say, something that was not good. But there has been a... maybe resistance to that set of ideas that government maybe shouldn't be in control of everything. Maybe government is not the best entity to be making important decisions. They can't even balance their budget, not even close. Why should they be making economic decisions for the entire country? So there has been quite a resistance. I actually am surprised. I run into people all the time, and they'll just say out of the blue, oh, I'm interested in economics. I'm interested in something called Austrian economics. And I'm like, wow, this is really amazing that people actually care about these ideas so much.
Well, why? I mean, their opinion is, I care about this because the girl that told me about it's really hot. I mean, you know, what is her motivation? What are you appealing to?
I actually know a guy who was telling me this style discussion about how he's interested in Austrian economics. Also happens to be dating a former beauty queen. So maybe that example that you're telling me is true in certain cases.
Well, I mean, so she's in Austrian economics? I mean, you know.
Well, I don't know about that. But I would say in general, a lot of people who are successful have to have a good understanding of how the world works, and economics provides that. Sitting at home playing video games, hoping for free health care from Bernie. Unfortunately, I don't think they have a very good understanding of how the world works. But for people who care, who actually want to go out there, make good choices, understanding this stuff is tremendously important for
them. Now, why is it that we've seen this shift? This is my point. You can kind of be forgiven this country of all the crap that we went through because they spent trillions of dollars creating, maintaining, enhancing the Generation Next brainwash, mind control, the mandatory youth indoctrination camps of this is what you think about that, with the Pentagon being able to, you know, propagandize their own people and kind of, you know, we're going to make you think this about that. And, oh, by the way, we got an experiment of we're going to drug you or something. So I'm going, all of this, I mean, this is what they have to go through to keep our opinion is that, yep, the government's here to help and 4 out of 5 dentists choose government. Okay. So I'm going, I get that. But with the internet and, decentralized internet, and then we have a satellite-based of suck it, and we're not on AT&T's prism of the NSA doesn't know what and encrypted to bite me. And I'm going, all of these things feed into where there's going to be a natural selection of ideas, and where you have half of the planet is not even online yet. When they get their super phone of, Elon Musk satellite-based gig up and down 20 millisecond latency, and we got the entire world's knowledge of I get to choose a philosophy, well, I guarantee they're not going to be choosing I get ruled by a king, you know, crown of fill in the next. There's going to be enough. How many? I don't know, but more than they, them, those are comfortable with. They, them, who are they? They're those that won't, just won't leave me alone. Leave me alone, or they won't be leave me alone. Well, that's who they, them, those are, the ones that won't leave me alone. So now we have an entire half of the population is coming to Edward Stringham realization of none your business. I don't need to have a biometric scan of get a bank account if I got crypto. So this, crypto. And the next wave of people coming online, you got to give me an opinion on that, man.
Yeah, I mean, knowledge is power. This happened in the early 1930s. FDR basically started confiscating people's gold, and then told people, hey, each dollar you had, we used to tell you that was 1/20th of an ounce of gold. Now, overnight, it's now 1/35th of an ounce of gold. And around that time, the American Institute for Economic Research, of which I'm president, was founded by E.C. Harwood, and he said, this is crazy. He didn't use those words, but he was worried about this. He was worried about the expansion of government power, the ability of them to take people's savings away through inflation, the ability of them to create these what I'll call a Ponzi scheme called Social Security, the ability of them to create a huge regulatory state through the Securities and Exchange Commission, and basically warning people, look, you've got to be careful. You did have your gold confiscated, and what can you do to avoid that moving forward? So a lot of government officials, including the IRS and SEC, you know, that's not what they're interested in. But knowledge is power. The ability to tell people that, they need to be careful, they need to protect their assets. And so, yeah, right now there's a lot of different programs that the government's expanding and, trying to take our money, and that is a great thing about crypto. That's a potential way of people protecting their wealth.
Yeah, it's like freedom. There's an app for that, you know? And as you got half the planet coming on and they're going to choose wisely, well, who's going to help them? Who's going to give them the, you know, ammunition around the water cooler and make them the smartest individual in the next wave of the people coming up a generation next? Edward Stringham, that got supported years ago by us and a lot of other people and so on, and there he is. Now it's his turn. Well, you know, we'll see what he does with this newfound power. Power to the peoples as he's on the media. Edward Stringham, look forward to seeing you at the Freedom Summit. FreedomSummit.com.
Ernest, nice to chat with you.
Hold on a second. Be right back. Yeah, there we go. All right, so what I'll go ahead and do is we'll have a bunch of stuff there at the event, but what I'd like to get from you is whatever group or organization or things that you're doing, you know, I'd like to have you feed me the next generation of you and some of these guys that just need a little bit of inspiration, a little support, a little something-something from, you know, Grandpa Levolution here, and I just you know, give them an opportunity to come on and say their stuff if you vouch for them.
Oh, great. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, no, they all they need is some positive reinforcement, just like, you know, what we did for you at the summit.
Oh, yeah,
and so
it's
on.
Amazing. It's amazing. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
So you got this one guy, you know, it's just like what they did for you. You go, yeah, okay, yeah, we're going to go on this show and kind of, and I'll give him, you know, the positive reinforcement of what for and whatever, and it'll make a difference in the future for him.
Oh, it's great. I really appreciate what you're doing, and thank you for what you've done for me. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I look forward to seeing you, Edward. Thanks for coming on, man.
All right, great. Cheers.
Peace.
Yeah.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keenan, the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Friday, January 26th, 2018. Silver is trading at $17.42 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,352 per ounce. Zencash is trading at $41, and the average price of Bitcoin is $11,493. Antiwar.com reports the U.S. continues to try to ratchet up the tensions with North Korea despite diplomatic progress being made between the two Koreas, and the Treasury Department announced new sanctions on Thursday against 16 people and six North Korean-flagged ships. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin also called on all nations, particularly China and Russia, to expel all North Koreans from their territory, accusing them of trying to fund the nuclear weapons program by soliciting funds abroad and evading sanctions. International interest in enforcing sanctions, particularly those imposed by the United States, has its limits. However, and recent reports suggest that North Korea has found itself new ways to evade sanctions, limiting their ability to export coal. Coal exports from North Korea to Russia, according to Reuters, was then passed on to South Korea and Japan, two of the nations that present themselves as most interested in enforcing the sanctions, but which appear less eager to go digging for technical violations through intermediaries. Zencash is the world's first private, distributed, and reliable platform for communications, transactions, and publishing. Zencash has the ability to use both transparent and shielded transactions, with shielded transactions using zero-knowledge proofs. Zencash features global governance with inclusive decision-making, reliable funding for continuous improvements, and documentation and wallets in many languages that are available for Linux, Mac, Windows, and Android devices. Learn more at zensystem.io. That's zensystem.io. UPI reports the engineer at the helm of an Amtrak train that crashed in December and killed three people in Washington State mistook a signal on the tracks at the curve where the train derailed. The 55-year-old engineer and the 48-year-old conductor who were in the lead locomotive at the time of the crash were seriously injured and unable to answer questions from investigators until last week. The National Transportation Safety Board said the engineer reported he felt rested and was not distracted by the presence of the conductor, who is there to become familiar with the tracks.